Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Like a lot of money for Rui. Feels like the market might be drying up a little bit here or something.
I don't know, man. 2 years, $14 million a year? Seems like a bargain.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we overvalue him, watch from afar out here, but God, I wouldn't have hated the Pistons getting involved at that price.
No, not at all.
Of course, we keep waiting for that another move. Yeah, waiting for that another move from Trajan.
I mean, Hachimura averaged, only averaged 11 points a game last year, but he was 3-point specialist.
Mm-hmm.
He shot well over 40% the last 3 years.
There could be news today on the Balogun suspension that might get reversed again, given Belgium's appeal of the appeal. So we'll see. Governing bodies have a tough job when it comes to every organization looking out for their best interests, U.S. soccer looking out for our team's best interest in filing the appeal. Belgium, they of course are like, wait a sec, why is this happening? It's only happened once before in the actual World Cup, but there have been some overturned red cards at other levels, including qualifying, where a couple players are supposed to sit out games in the World Cup, including one with Ronaldo, got overturned. I think the reporting on this has been pretty shoddy, and we really rely on you World Cup media. But you know, when it comes down to it, when the first foul took place and the red card was awarded, we were told there was no mechanism for reinstatement. That was wrong. Then we were told that these never get overturned. It was also wrong. Additionally, Belgium is appealing the decision this morning. So there's multiple mechanisms to get these things overturned. But that's why I made work. I don't chump media members very much, but I'm nobody specifically. I just feel like this wasn't for an audience here that really doesn't know much about soccer, Scott. I feel like we really needed somebody in the media to explain how this mechanism worked to appeal, that he could be back, that it's happened before, and we didn't really hear that. But at the end of the day, maybe I missed it, although I got no pushback on this either.
No, and it's a strange thing. I mean, as I think American fans that are parachuting in like I am, probably like, okay, it's great. Yeah, I didn't think that was a penalty to begin with, and it seemed like it was punitive. They kicked him out of the game for it. It seems way rough, and let alone that he's suspended for the next game. And yet, that's just soccer. That's how the sport is. You have to accept it. That's what the sport is. They put the kibosh on things like this quickly. They don't let it, escalate to anything. You're out of the game. Red card. And yet, all the flopping that goes on, they tolerate that to a point. But it's not my sport.
Nope.
It's not my sport. So I feel like I have to take a step aside.
Although it's starting.
Guys, do what you're going
to
do.
You're starting to get into the World Cup a little bit. And I thought you got a little bit as a soccer evangelist earlier in the show, trying to get people to join the congregation.
No, not at all.
You say that, but I'm just going to tell you, for a minute there, you sounded like it. I just wanted to point out how I was interpreting.
Then I'm going to have to scale it back. I'm enjoying the World Cup.
Don't do that. I think people are entertained by your take.
I'm enjoying the World Cup, but this is not going to explode into something else.
Well, we're underdogs tonight. Belgium's a top 10 team. In the back half of the top 10, we're in the middle of the teens. And this is usually where we peter out in terms of World Cup runs, but maybe we keep this thing alive and then set up the real miracle on the pitch, the winner of Spain and Portugal. That will play each other on the other side of the bracket in a game that starts today at 3. 248-539-9797. Tigers take 2 of 3 from Texas after the sweep of the Yankees. Another good stretch of play here. Look, they're 10 games under with 22 games until the trade deadline. Okay? So, quick math, 16-6. 16-6 gets them back to 500. 500 teams have a chance at the wild card. There's a weird feeling in Detroit where there's sort of an acknowledgement that I don't think they can get it done. So what's the point? They may as well sell. If they get too close and they don't sell, then they could become the Angels, losing Ohtani for almost nothing. Oh man, it just is kind of a catch-22 for the fans. Those playoff runs have been fun. And both Tiger playoff teams the last couple of years actually won a round, which was cool. And last year's team flirted ever so dangerously to advancing to the American League Championship Series. And this year's team has characteristics of a good baseball team when it comes to run differential and starting pitcher and three players from your lineup in the All-Star game. Sounds like it should be a damn good team.
I think it's a good team that had an awful May. And when I say good, I mean better than 500 team. I think that's what this team ultimately should have been, was a better than 500 team. They got some work to do to get back there. It's a lot of heavy lifting still to do. And in the second half of the season here, they might have to do the heavy lifting without their best pitcher, because I think he should be traded regardless. I would 100% trade Tarek Skubal at some point in the next 4 weeks. And it doesn't mean I'm not going for it. It means I'm going to trade Tarek Skubal because I don't want to lose him for nothing. And I would still try to find a legitimate right-handed bat that kills left-handed pitching, because the Tigers are struggling with finding those guys on their roster right now. And they seem unwilling to allow one of the guys that's killing left-handed pitching at Toledo to have that chance here with the big league club. So, okay. If I'm not gonna use the guys at Toledo, then I may as well trade some guys from Toledo or elsewhere in the organization and get somebody who does it at the major league level. I'm buying and I'm selling.
Well, I think buying is something that doesn't get talked about nearly enough, because this team, even if they get back in it, has to recognize they need more to make a serious run. And the one thing that you can never say no to, and people say, oh, Scott Harris hasn't. If you look back at the greatest deadline deal in Detroit sports history, it was a perfect confluence of events that landed Rasheed Wallace in Detroit. It was three teams that were needed. It was Boston looking to make a salary dump. It was Atlanta looking to make a salary dump. They helped facilitate this deal. They both got future assets. And it was a player that could help you that suddenly became available, that, you know, you didn't see a trade like this possibly going down. Those kind of perfect deals for certain teams don't always come around. And that one happened to be perfect for that Piston team at that time. And it credit Joe Dumars for pulling the trade off, but it also kind of fell in his lap that these things all happened, that you could get Rasheed Wallace for the price that they paid, which was Zelly Rabacha and a couple of picks, and it just didn't hurt at all. And the throw-in, Mike James, turned into a valuable player as well. What if all of a sudden Aroldis Chapman is available at just the right price? It could be a surprise addition if Boston bails. You know who might be a surprise guy? I'm a little searching today. Might be on the market that I can't imagine, because this team's even ahead of Detroit, is Byron Buxton. Now, and I just...
They say he's not.
I know.
Minnesota says, but I would hunt. Listen, you're not going to find a bigger fan of Byron Buxton than me.
I know.
But if that was at all possible, I would try almost anything to do it. And then cross your fingers that he can stay healthy for an elongated period of time.
These are just examples, though, of where could a player suddenly become available, where you don't, here's what we don't know, that somebody out there, some GM out there, and their scouts aren't saying, I'd do anything to have Tyron Lorenzo or Max Anderson or some player that is expendable for Detroit, you know? And so that's why I think buying could be a thing.
And with, you know, Dylan Dingler, now he's an all-star. He's all-star Dylan Dingler now. We can talk about him that way. The Tigers have two other catchers on their 40-man roster. They actually have three other on their 40-man roster, but the aforementioned Tyron Lorenzo and Eduardo Valencia is also on the 40-man. He's at Toledo. Mm-hmm. Valencia is killing it at Toledo. He's doing awfully well. In fact, he is hitting a total of, I think he's hitting .267, but .844 with his OPS as a catcher. He's right-handed, has an over 900 OPS against left-handed pitching. I wonder how much longer before he gets his opportunity to get brought up.
That's your guy. Guy.
People. He's becoming a new guy. I mean, it's a guy I've followed for sure over the last couple of years. But, you know, when you're watching, Dylan Dingler's the guy, without question. Mm-hmm. seeing in the future, you're going to end up having to make a decision real quickly on Valencia or Lorenzo before you leave them unprotected at some point. You don't want to do that. So one of these guys is going to get an opportunity, and Valencia happens to be higher up the food chain because he's already at AAA. What does that mean for Jake Rogers? I like Jake Rogers. I think he's a great guy. I think he handles the pitching staff well, but he's not getting it done at the plate and hasn't for a while. I think someone else needs to get an opportunity, particularly if they're going to hit left-handed pitching. And if this allows you to protect Dingler a little bit more, where Dingler gets DH'd a little bit more, and then Valencia can are adding a right-handed bat to the lineup as well, why not at some point? I'm not saying it needs to happen today. I'm just saying keep an eye on it.
248-539-9797. Monday's main champ and chump. My champ of the weekend was Casey Mize. Gator champ of the weekend was Riley Green. My champ of the weekend was FIFA reporting. We need you to be more accurate in your reporting of suspensions and things of that nature so we know what to believe and what not to believe. Your chump is the Marlins manager for pulling his pitcher at a perfect game after seven. It's Carson Anderson. Open lines. Who you got as champ and chump of the weekend? We talk to the people next on 97.1.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Line calls. We go to Chris. You're next on 97.1. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. Hope you had a good holiday.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Got up north. Loved it.
Yeah. Had a pretty good weather, a little spots of rain, but not nothing to complain about. So I was thinking, kind of wrapping two subjects you guys were talking about together, mm-hmm. with the Eury Pérez near no-hitter, perfect game, and Trump and the governing bodies reversing a call. It made me think, like, what if we had a government official, president, whoever, when Galarraga had the near-perfect game, and came out and tried to do something like that. I was thinking about other sports with close calls and stuff, and I know Detroit sports have had a lot of those. But, like, off the top of your guys' head, what would you think or want to have someone try to, you know, reverse in a situation like that? Because I just keep thinking of the Galarraga.
So the Galarraga thing got addressed, and that replay was brought in, and in this modern era, it would have been a perfect game.
100%.
Yeah, so... If you're asked, and it sounds like your question is, do we want government officials intervening in sports rulings? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, pretty much.
I can't even begin to tell you how much I'm against it.
I agree, because it seems like there's already enough, government and all that in college sports nowadays. So it's just, it's wild. It seems like it's getting out of control. But I just didn't know if you guys had any other sporting things that, you know, off the top of your head, like, I wish this could have happened there, but I'll hang up and listen. Great show, guys.
Yeah, I don't want anything overturned because of outside influence. I don't want that. I want it to be done organically within the rules of what's going on. This may have been in play here.
The Athletic does a great job of laying out how USA Soccer handled this, okay? And one of the chief supporters of USA Soccer said any implication that it was anything other than USA Soccer, and given they're battling to fight the perception of improprieties, outside influences claiming it was them, doesn't really help. And when we're talking about Trump here, it doesn't help that Trump is saying, yeah, I called. And the rest of the world is going, okay. So the organization that handed Trump an award for his peace award now is turning around and doing him a solid. That's how the rest of the world sees this. No matter what you believe or not. USA Soccer saying we followed the procedures.
Yeah.
We don't like the way they handled the video review, which you're not allowed to slow it down in frame by frame. We think they did that.
That needs to be the story. The story is Team USA made the appeal. Now, the president speaking up and picking up the phone and calling the head of FIFA and saying, hey, it'd be nice if he reconsidered this. Because even Trump has said that he didn't demand it, that they overturn this. Even he has said that he just, picked the phone, talked to the guy. But I would feel a lot better knowing that this whole procedure was done above board, that it was a simple appeal process. Team USA made the appeal. FIFA listened to it, reviewed it, and said, you're right. I think the way VAR was done was mishandled, and That's why we overturned it.
According to The Athletic, the argument stated that the video assistant referee system had not been implemented correctly, with an emphasis on the use of slow motion and freeze frame of the incident being at the center of these claims. Okay, if you're not supposed to do that and they did it, then there and that helped influence this call. But again, and this is why I've chumped the world soccer media. Immediately they should have said these have been overturned in the past. Only once in the World Cup, but it did happen in the past. It's happened at other times. Here are the mechanisms that you can follow, and here's why you can potentially get something overturned. But that wasn't presented for until really today is the first time I've seen it. 248-539-9797, which has everybody screaming. I mean, look, people aren't listening to the ticket in London right now, but if they were, 97.1 in London thinks this is terrible. Brussels. The Valeni of Brussels is losing it right now.
Clearly.
Julian, you're on 97.1. Hello, Julian.
Gentlemen, top of the afternoon to you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
So I guess I'll start with the champ and chump. My chump is, I guess, FIFA, Infantino, everything you guys have alluded to, just of the horrific mismanagement. If I were to throw out a champ just to stay on theme, I'd probably throw out Norway. Great performance, and just great to see an underdog take out a powerhouse like Brazil. So, I definitely take an issue with the suspension being overturned. I do agree with the points that you guys have made that the media is partially to blame because of very poor reporting.
Let me be clear here, Julian. We don't have great soccer media in the United States. We really don't. And it's a supply and demand. There isn't really a demand for it. So, you know, we are relying, and I'm speaking of me and many people that I know, almost everyone I know, we don't know how this stuff works. So to get late or inaccurate reporting on how it works isn't helping.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I mean, it's not like we have whiz soccer reporting in Canada, but I know we definitely do a lot of cross collaboration with a lot of European stations. So my take is this, and I base this just on my opinion and my experience having now watched, I don't know, World Cups going back to 98, not as intensely the last couple as I used to watch almost every match before, but every World Cup has controversy, right? Mm-hmm. You'll be hard pressed to find a World Cup where there wasn't some controversy, some set of egregious calls. Conspiracy theories abound about FIFA being one of the most corrupt sports organizations and skewing the results. I'm going to stay away from all that, but there's a lot there to look into. In general, with the exception of the 1962 precedent that you guys have highlighted,
yep.
Regardless of how egregious a call has been in the past in a match, and regardless of the outcome of that call, during the World Cup, those calls have been left alone. And I'm very much of the belief in sports in general that bad calls happen all the time. Technology is coming into play more and more to try and, you know, cut down on the human element. But once the call is made, and certainly once the match or the game is over, that's that.
So, you know what? The one thing about the history of this whole thing, and I guess the basis of our appeal had to do with VAR, and I looked up when VAR was implemented, and apparently was the mid-teens. And so there's not as much of a history with the VAR, and if there was which is video assistant review, or video assistant referee, if they used it improperly, this might be new territory. But hey, look, thank you for the phone call, 248-539-9797. So the reason I bring that up is because I don't think we have, it's only once in 50 years, VAR is a new thing, relatively speaking, that might make this justifiable. It might not. Dude, I'm in no position to, I don't know, I like the sport a lot when it comes to the World Cup. Gator, you like the sport a lot when it comes to the World Cup. I think there's a lot of people like us. But, you know, God, where's Grant Wall when we meet? Remember Grant Wall? I mean, I know what happened with Grant Wall. He passed away, sadly. But Grant Wall was the foremost authority on soccer and reporter for Sports Illustrated for years, I believe. And he'd have been all over this. Roger Faulkner. Remember Roger Faulkner, Detroit guy?
Yeah, I know his son.
Yeah. I had Roger Faulkner on a lot back in the day.
Did you?
When we did Guess.
Yeah.
That guy would set us straight. Yeah. Let's go to Ron next on 97.1. Hello, Ron.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
What's up?
First of all, welcome back, Doug. I've been listening on Odyssey, so I might be a little bit behind. I apologize if I take you guys off track, but I think you're still talking about the Balogun situation.
Been
listening to you guys for a long time. I follow all Detroit sports and everything, but I'm also a huge European soccer guy. Follow Liverpool a lot, which, by the way, Doug, I think that would be your team if you ever got into it.
Okay.
Just knowing your history with Michigan and stuff, I think there's a lot of parallels, City of Detroit and stuff like that. And also, hearing Gator talk soccer for 4 hours on Friday was unreal.
Dude, I said something. I don't want him to gear it back. I said he sounded like an evangelist for the sport earlier today, but don't change, Gator. We love it. Sorry. Anyway, point, Ron, is?
Unfortunately, soccer, as great of a sport as it is, it's always been defined by, like, these crazy things. You know, you got Zidane's headbutt. You got, like, exceptions being made here and there.
Hand of God goal, Maradona.
Exactly, which they kept showing over the weekend. I don't love this. And the thing is, like, Balogun, as great as he's been, he's not our best player. I think we absolutely would win this game without him, without any controversy. Wow. You know, I used to love Belgium, right? They had some of my favorite players. Those guys have aged out. Those guys are – it's just not a very good team. And what USA has shown in this tournament, they're going to run circles around them.
Wow.
And win regardless. Yeah, I mean, you know, they have some of the best players of all time, Belgium, but those guys are past their prime. You know, you got, like, an aging LeBron, essentially, against, like, you know, some of the young guys coming up. So I kind of wish we weren't a part of this, and I wonder if we just don't play this guy. Because, you know, it's like in college football, if you're kind of playing, like, an ineligible player, and even years later people will talk about how you didn't deserve that title or whatever. And I don't want that kind of situation against the team I think we would beat anyway.
Ron, this is, I mean, look, we have no reason to doubt your credentials. I got Ron on a cell. Ron, where exactly are you from?
Well, I'm Canton.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I want to make note. Really into.
No, Ron, I want to make note of who made the call. Ron in Canton is saying we would win this game without Balogun.
Look, people in Canton know soccer.
Given Belgium motivation, Cup. We didn't need to. Yeah.
Canton Cup takes over your town. Everybody in Canton knows soccer.
Everybody.
Champ and Chump, get your votes in. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Suppose it doesn't really matter and it's irrelevant. It had to be in by 8 a.m. our time. And that could be ruled upon before the game. Balogun might not play after all this when it's all said and done. Now, FIFA's released a statement.
They have. And the statement is from the president, Gianni Infantino. He says, FIFA's judicial bodies are independent. They operate autonomously, apply the FIFA disciplinary code, and decides cases based on applicable regulations and the specific facts before them. Their independence is essential to the credibility and integrity of football, and this must always be respected. Yes, I regularly discuss matters related to the FIFA World Cup with the President of the United States. And on this matter, I did receive a call from President Donald Trump. Just as I received calls from heads of state, government officials, football stakeholders and business executives from around the world on many different issues. During our conversation, I explained that there was an ongoing legal process involving FIFA's independent judicial bodies and that the case would be decided in due course by the competent bodies. This is how FIFA's system works, and it's a principle that I will always uphold. I read the decisions of the FIFA Disciplinary Committee when they are issued. Sometimes I'm surprised by them. Sometimes I agree with them, and sometimes I disagree. What I always do, however, is respect those decisions and the autonomy of the bodies that make them. Whether we personally like a decision or not is irrelevant. Respect for independent institutions and the rule of law is what protects the integrity of our competitions and the credibility of FIFA at all times.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there. But what I get out of that is that, yeah, you know, Team USA is the one that made the appeal and process. And by the time that Trump called his offices, he's like, yeah, okay, great.
Were in motion.
Yeah.
So look, I mean, the perception, I don't know if that's going to help the perception worldwide, but I was listening to ESPN FC. Okay. This is their podcast that covers soccer. I don't think there's one American on that podcast. They were just saying this is the most ridiculous thing ever. And you know, for them and their culture and the soccer culture, I can't parachute in and provide a whole lot of years and years and years of watching the sport analysis and following all the suspensions and how they were doled out. But I'm, you know, at this point, if USA Soccer followed correct procedures and the mechanism was in place to be able to appeal a call and it was in their rule book, we followed it with a legitimate complaint about how VAR was used, then that's following the rules and the governing body. And anybody else, like, I don't know if I like the part where he says, I take calls from world leaders and business guys all the time. Oh, great. Do we really want this person in charge of a governing body of a sport to be taking calls from world leaders and business owners? And
well, look, FIFA's already got this dark cloud hanging over it because everybody thinks they're corrupt to begin with. But if you take it just as at face value of what is said, am I surprised that people from all over the world are going to contact the head of FIFA? No, I'm not surprised at all. What would surprise me is if they were able to curry favor because of the calls. That would be the disappointing part. Go ahead and take a call from a president of the United States or from Egypt or from
or
where?
Belgium.
Or Belgium. That wherever it is. Well, but it doesn't mean it has to influence your decision.
I guess
and
the question.
I don't know what's happened here. It just, this, you know, I'm glad the Team USA made the appeal. I'm glad that there is a process that FIFA goes through. And if their determination is that they lift the suspension, so be it.
Do you remember how mad, I want to make sure I get the names right. Do you remember how mad we were and felt totally justifiable by when we saw, was it Dean Blandino getting onto a party bus with Jerry Jones right before a call got reversed that very well might have cost the Lions a playoff win at Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Did we feel screwed there?
Yes.
So maybe
I mean, nothing. I mean, we can't
draw a straight line, but this is why when you say I take calls from people all the time, maybe you shouldn't. I don't know. Again, well, not our sport. So
he has to say maybe you shouldn't, right? But yeah. He has to acknowledge it because obviously the president is out there taking credit for this and at least announcing to the world that he made a phone call. So now you have to
come
clean with that, right? And then also at the same, which I think is smart by FIFA and President Infantino. I think it's smart for him to come out and say, yeah, okay, this happened, but it happens from world leaders all over the place.
All right, let's go to Isaac in Royal Oak. Hello, Isaac.
Doug, we didn't feel like we got screwed in 2014. We were screwed by the Cowboys on that call.
Yeah.
Get it straight. So I've grown up playing soccer my entire life, played soccer in the college and in young adulthood. All my kids play soccer. I've got a ton of experience. I still watch English Premier League on a regular basis. Across the board, regardless of their country affiliation, everyone has said that was not a red card. I don't care. And no one in America should feel guilty or shame or bad about us getting a break. Remember, we talk about the Lions all the time, and you say, Doug, like, we are due. For one, we shouldn't feel bad when one finally bounces our way. I feel that way on this right here. And it'd be one thing if you could say, oh, maybe it was a red card or he got a yellow and it could have been a red. Everyone has said that it shouldn't have been a card at all. So I don't think that we should lose any sleep whatsoever. And if he scores three goals tonight, no one in the end is going to remember it because there's still two more games that they have to win if they're going to get anywhere near winning the World Cup. I think that it's a non-issue. Who cares? Let's move on.
Well, I guess, Isaac, I would just say, I would think that I feel like you're wrong in this statement that no one will care if he scores three goals and we win tonight. I don't think anybody here will care.
fair. Maybe the international community be a little bit upset, but I wouldn't. And I think in the end, they're not going to remember. Last point, do I want government officials involved in sporting decisions? They can't get local administrative issues for local, state, and federal governments, right? If you're placing a phone call about a sporting event, I have to think there's a better place for your time to be and a priority that actually affects your constituents. No, I don't want them involved in sports.
Isaac, thank you for the phone call. That was a question that was asked of us by a listener. Let's go to Brandon in Shelby Township. You're next. Hello, Brandon.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Okay. Good.
Can I do a champ and chump before my point?
Sure.
So my champ is USA because out of all the hosting countries, I know they played before us, but we're the last hosting country left. All three hosting countries made it to the past their divisions, but we're the only one left. And my chump is the guy from Brazil. They were down 2-0, and then he scored. Like, the goalie didn't move. If you guys saw that, the goalie didn't move because he knew the game was over in 3 seconds.
Well, I don't know if that's why he didn't move, but yes, you're talking about Neymar.
So my point was the Tigers. So could they be buyers and sellers at the same time? So one of the things we need is another bat. And, like, we're not going to trade Scooble for another another contract that's expiring.
Gators brought this up, Brandon. And
I'm a big proponent. I want to buy and I want to sell. I'm going to sell Tarek Skubal because I think you have to do it. I think that, I'd feel differently if I didn't think the Tigers had a really good starting rotation, but they have a really good starting rotation. They have a surplus of starting pitching. Now, trading away the best one is not necessarily what you'd want to do, but I think it's responsible given that they're going to head into free agency in the offseason. And you already know right now, if you're the Tigers, you have to know. And certainly by the trade deadline, you have to know if you have a legitimate shot of signing Tarek Skubal or not. And if you come to the conclusion that you do not, then you have to trade him. And at the same time, you also have a bunch of minor league prospects that other teams would be interested in that you could trade to acquire a bat in the lineup that is, you know, prolific at hitting left-handed pitching.
Plus, we have Job and Olsen coming back. So I heard Job's coming back.
Well, Job can come back. Yeah, Job can come back maybe as early as next month in August. Reese Olsen, I believe, is going to be out until next year. But, yeah, Job is another one that could come back.
248-539-9797, Tim in Sterling Heights. Hello, Tim.
Hey, guys.
What's
hey,
up?
You know, I'm not a soccer fan either, but I've been having a fun time watching the World Cup. So I'm going to stick with that for my champ and chump. So, Haaland, man, that guy was awesome last night for Norway. He scored both goals. So, he's my champ. And the chump is the guy that gave the red card to the American player. I mean, he's caused the turmoil, right? And then you talked about his past. You know, he's kind of sketchy, man. Like,
well, we brought it up earlier in the show for people who missed it. Yes, Yahoo did a story about he took accusations back in 2013 in Brazil's first division of giving out, quote, irregular red cards, and he was actually came before a tribunal and had to testify, and they couldn't find any direct link to any improprieties. But the question is, why is this dude even working a World Cup game in the first place? Now, I might find out that the answer is because there's a shortage of elite officiating, and he was next in line. Maybe I, you know, it might be that simple. But yeah, this is when you find out a guy who was known for giving out irregular red cards gave one out at the World Cup level that's led to the biggest controversy of this World Cup, who would be shocked?
You know, Gator asked for the elite soccer fans to call in with stuff. Why don't you call them, have them call in and say, why is this guy playing if he has a shady pass? Or if he's reffing
yeah.
He has a shady pass.
It's a valid question.
yeah. Somebody needs to tell us why.
Thank you for the phone call. So Norway was just a team that I said I'm going to piggyback on and get excited about because, you know, you sure pick somebody else you're rooting for. And it was all because of their team picture that I showed you. And I think we retweeted it right before the World Cup where they all dressed up as Vikings and took this picture like in a remote lake with mountains and Viking ships in the background. And they all looked like they were ready to go somewhere with Braveheart. Like they were awesome.
Pillage.
Yeah.
Do stuff.
It's the greatest team photo I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I mean, look, This Erling Haaland guy looks like he should be a Targaryen on Game of Thrones. I mean, he's massive individual, 6'5", and he just seems to score 2 goals every game. I think it's what he does. Like the one thing that's been great about to help lure in the casual soccer fan or the guy who's parachuting in like me is that the stars of the world of soccer are shining as bright as can be. Mbappe is scoring goals.
Dude, he's so good.
You got the guy from England.
Even Gronk, no,
he good. The guy from England, was it Kane? Is that his last name? He's scoring. This guy's, you know, Haaland is scoring. You've got all these great players. Messi is scoring goals. Everyone seems to be scoring 2 goals in a game or a goal and assist or whatever. When the biggest stars in the world are shining like that, that's what's going to attract the casual fan to become more of a fan.
Hey, it's Doug Karsh for Sarah Chevrolet and Sterling. Doug Karsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1. All kinds of stuff today. We haven't even talked about the Kevin Durant rumors. Kevin Durant to Detroit? Could it be? Interesting. Depends on the price, of course. Under contract a couple more years, and they can get him without cutting into the core. He's still scoring, man. Still scoring.
I think you get him without cutting into the core, but he's definitely scoring. He's still scoring 26 points a game last year, I think. Still shooting ridiculously well from beyond three. But he's also hanging another year on the guy.
Yep.
Not sure that you want to give up all the draft capital to get Kevin Durant.
Yep. All right, feedback coming in regarding the Tigers. Richard writes in, I think the Tigers can do both. I think they can sell, get a haul for Scooble, and also be buyers and make a run. Well, look, it's hard to envision a scenario where you get rid of the best pitcher in baseball and strengthen your case to make a run. Like I'm not quite sure how they can accomplish that. I'm also not quite sure how at the trade deadline in 2024 they sold and made a run and won a round in the playoffs. They have really good starting pitching. They have 3 all-stars in the lineup. They feel like they still have all kinds of deficiencies. And yet, you know, you can see the makings of an exceptionally above average baseball team. Don't want to overstate it, but, and they've played some above average baseball the last 2 seasons. Now they went through the better part of, I don't know, 5 months of baseball last year into this year where they were not exceptional. They were not above average, but. From an unnamed text, there isn't a single thing that could take place before the deadline that would prevent me from trading Scooble for the best deal offered. I think that's easy to say, and we're all assuming that the best deal offered would be a really good deal. And I would think that that's probably the case. The thing is, what you just said is there's not a single thing that could take place. And I'm like, well, 16-6 will get you to 500 by the trade deadline. And if the single best deal offered feels like a similar deal, let me be clear here, similar deal that they got for JV back in the day, I don't think I'd be compelled. That feels like to me 2 circumstances that would allow me to say no. But he said not a single thing. Neither of those things seem likely. I do not think they're going to go 16-6. And I feel like given Scooble, they could get something good for him because of who he is.
Yeah, I mean, 16-6, that's by the trade deadline. I don't think they don't have to be 500 by the trade deadline. They're 5 games from the wild card right now. Find yourself in closer striking distance, and I think you've got every reason to go ahead and buy. But as I've been, you know, stumping here a little bit, I'd still trade Scooble. I think you'd make your rotation weaker, but it's a very, very strong rotation that will add some more to it as the season goes on with perhaps Jackson Jobe, Justin Verlander at some point, you think, but maybe not. But they'll have other players that are going to come in and out of that rotation. They have a surplus of pitching right now, and they've got this stud pitcher that everybody would want And you would imagine the asking price is going to be very high, as it should be high. But you'd probably be able to get something really good in return. Go ahead and make that move. At the same time, the number one thing this team needs, it may not necessarily be the right-handed bat that kills left-handed pitching. It might be bullpen arms. So should the Tigers go out there and try to buy some bullpen arms? Yes. Should they try to find a right-handed hitting? Yes.
Well, they'd have to. Their play would have to justify, right, from between here and then?
Yeah, but their play since June 1st has been, what, best in baseball?
Yep, and I mean, 10 games under, weren't they bottom out at 16 games under?
Yes.
Yeah. Guys, why not call the Tigers what they are, a great team with a bad manager? No way this team should be as bad, but AJ simply wants to be the smartest guy in the room. That's from Rob in Chelsea.
I won't say that, Rob, because I think AJ Hinch is an outstanding manager. If you look at this lineup and you see, okay, you've got three all-stars without question. It's remarkable how they have like four guys that can really hit and everybody else not so much. You know, you've got the three all-stars that can hit. Throw Cary Carpenter in a mix who can hit. And then that's really it, because Gleyber Torres is out. Otherwise, I'd include Torres in there. Who knows when he's coming back? Torkelson is... He's above average in OPS, but he's not hitting well this year. And then everybody else is like well below average when it comes to OPS on this team. You got guys below 600 that are starting or finding the way into the lineup more often than not. I mean, you can understand why the team isn't doing as well as they are. And it's not just the lineup the bottom half of the lineup, which is poor. The bullpen has been atrocious this year. Sorry, Doug.
It's okay. No, it's fine. As far as AJ's concerned, I wouldn't label AJ Hinch a bad manager. I don't think AJ's having a great year. I think AJ has got a formula that's worked with this many of these same players that has probably in all reality, maybe even overachieved a little bit the last couple of years, in part because of AJ. It hasn't worked as well this year, and I don't know that he has shifted gears quickly enough. You can only play the players that you have on your roster, but obviously Scott Harris is ultimately responsible for that, but I don't think AJ's had the magic touch the way he has the last couple of years. But you know, he still has a chance to manage his way out of this, I guess, if you're looking at it from a perspective of trying to salvage something this year.
No, there's no question he hasn't had the same magic touch. And is that on him, or is that also on Scott Harris? Because who's making the decisions to bring players up or bring players down or send players down? You know, Jake Rogers has the worst OPS on the team. It's 441. All right. His numbers have gone down steadily for the last 4 or 5 years. And the batting average, specifically with the batting average, the OPS number, he had 1 year kind of flared up, but everything else has been bad. And this year, it's career worst 441. Jamai Jones was counted on to be that guy who hit left-handed pitching. His OPS is 449. He's been terrible this year. Zach McKinstry was an all-star last year. His OPS is at 565. You know, Matt Vierling was a big piece of this team before. Now, his OPS, 595. These now, are guys that are playing
average
a lot.
Is 700, a little over 700 in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, for OPS, yeah. Yes. So you're talking guys that
well
you start at 100 points below, and then you move worse away from that. It's not good. And is it too much of a reliance on those guys? I think so, to a point. But again, is that AJ Hinch or is that Scott Harris that it's reluctant to say we're going to promote this guy or promote that guy? And I listen to the arguments when he's asked about it, and I agree with a lot of what his argument is in not wanting to block players and why bring up somebody if they're only going to play one out of three games and stuff like I can understand it, but they've got pieces at Toledo where guys I don't think are expected to be much at the major league level, but have a little taste of what it's like to play in the major leagues, that if they're brought up and not playing every day, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, as opposed to if you're going to try to bring up Max Clark and you're playing one out of 3 days, it doesn't make sense.
248-539-9797, phone calls, feedback. A lot of people wanting to talk about the Tigers. Champ and Chump votes coming in. We've had unprecedented FIFA calls today. we await word of whether or not the Belgians' appeal of the United States appeal is successful or not. We'll pass that along if there is news. Last chance to get those champ and chump calls coming up next hour here on Carson Anderson on 97.1.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.